Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you that views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us on the line from the East Coast, Mr. Kenneth Timmerman, and we're going to be talking about his book, Preachers of Hate, Islam and the War on America. Mr. Timmerman, are you there?
How are you?
I'm doing just fine, thanks. And I appreciate so much you being with us. And we've already had Mr. Timmerman on once on this book, and I was so pleased with the interview that we've invited him to address the rest of our audience, because this is a very, very important book, because it goes into the mindset of the Islamic people. And these aren't necessarily Islamic radicals. Many of these are very schooled and learned people, professional people, and yet the intense hatred that they have for the Jews, and so much of it even carried over to the Americans, and which really explains what's going on over there and why we're never going to be able to have some sort of a land for peace, a settlement over there, because of we're not going to have peace until the Palestinian mothers love their sons more than they hate the Jews. Would that be a fair statement?
I think it is, Dan, and it's a terrible thing to have to say, and yet that is, unfortunately, I think, the truth.
Well, let's get a little bit into this, because you've actually traveled over there. You've been there. You've talked to the people within the Palestinian area and the Gaza Strip over in Jordan. Why don't you just give our listeners an overview of your impression of what's going on and why this intense hatred?
Well, I've spent about the past 20 years going back and forth to the region and speaking to Islamic leaders, speaking to secular leaders as well. And, you know, for so many years, I worked for so-called mainstream news organizations in this country, and they never felt it was really news when a Palestinian leader or an Islamic cleric from that region would say they hate the Jews or they hate America. They said, well, of course they hate the Jews, and of course they hate America, because we're supporting Israel. Well, I began to delve into this a little bit deeper and talk to Rabbi Abraham Cooper at the Simon Wiesenthal Center. About 10 years ago, he said, Ken, the next time you go over, ask them about the protocols of the Elders of Zion. And I said, well, you know, nobody's going to believe that. It's a fabrication by the Secret Service of the Russian Tsar 100 years ago. It's an anti-Semitic fable, and everybody knows it. He said, just ask the question. And that was really an eye-opener for me. And I began to ask leaders of Hamas and Islamic Jihad and elsewhere what they thought of this forgery, this fabrication. And they said, oh yes, we know all about the protocols of the Elders of Zion. In fact, here's my copy right here. People would take it down from the bookshelf. This is a treatise which purports to be the actual minutes of meetings of the wise men of Zion as they got together and plotted how they were going to take over the world. And in the Muslim world, they believe that this actually happened, and that there is indeed a world Jewish conspiracy, and that they are the victims of it.
And really, this is so fascinating, because these are learned people. These are not stupid people. And this is being drummed into them. And as you read this thing, basically, it's a very convincing document. In fact, I recommend to people in the United States, don't read it, because you can actually come to believe this, because so many of it appears to be true. And yet, I agree with you totally, it's a forgery. Somebody put this out at the beginning of the last century to promote anti-Semitism. And this was actually used in Hitler's Germany, which is why so many of the Arabs almost identify with the Nazis, and so many of them feel that Adolf Hitler was really a pretty good guy.
Well, there's a story that I tell in Preachers of Hate, and it's going to come as a surprise to some people. Anwar Sadat, who is viewed as a great peacemaker, the man who made the Camp David peace agreement between Israel and Egypt in 1979. Well, Sadat, when he was a young soldier in the Egyptian army in the early 1950s, wrote a letter to one of the main papers in Egypt at a time when there was a rumor going on that Adolf Hitler had not died in his bunker, but in fact had managed to escape and was living in Argentina. Okay, and he wrote into the paper had this contest, and they said, "Well, if Hitler were alive, what would you say to him?" And so Anwar Sadat writes into the paper. He says, "Well, I would tell you, great man that you are, that of course you have not lost this war. You actually won the war, and we will finish the task for you here in the Middle East. We'll finish off with the Jews." Here's Anwar Sadat, the man who makes peace with the Jews, saying this kind of thing. He was an admirer of Hitler. By the way, so was Saddam Hussein, an admirer of Hitler. And he was brought up by an uncle who had been a Nazi soldier, a Nazi a sympathizer during World War II in Iraq.
Well, I'm going to have to interrupt you. I got so involved in our conversation, I forgot to run the music up as we brought on a new station. So our guest this afternoon is Kenneth Timmerman. He's written a number of articles in Insight magazine. I've interviewed him on his other books he's written. But today we're going to be talking with him about his book, Preachers of Hate, which I think is so important because most Americans, at least the average run of the mill American, has never heard of the Protocols of the Learned Elders as I am. The anti-Semites have. In fact, I'll never forget first time somebody gave me a copy of the Protocols was about 40 years ago, and it was in a brown paper bag. And there's hardly a week go by that I don't get a letter in the mail, usually unsigned, condemning me for not attacking the Jews. And there really is a growing tide of anti-Semitism in America today, and so much of it goes back to this document, which is so widely circulated in the Arab world. I had no idea how widely circulated it was in the Arab world, but certainly it's very widely circulated in Europe. It was during the Nazi period, and of course, if you circulate it in Germany today, you go to jail, which only convinces more and more people that there's really a Jewish conspiracy that controls the German government and won't allow this to be circulated. But it is truly an evil document because it is believable, and yet, of course, it's not true.
Yes, well, that's right, and it's it has been over the past 30 years, it has been reprinted and handed out personally by Ayatollah Khomeini in Iran. He ordered it reprinted. By the way, Iran had never Iranians had never hated the Jews. The Persians, as people who study history or study the Bible will recall, the Persians were the Persian king Cyrus released the Jews from captivity all those many years ago, and there's always been a thriving Jewish community in Iran.
Hold that thought right here. We have to bring our stations right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon, Kenneth Timmerman. We're talking about his book, Preachers of Hate. We're talking about the intense hatred of the Islamic people, and this is all throughout the Middle East, for the Jews, and secondarily, for the United States, because we back the Jews, because they believe there is a Jewish conspiracy to rule the world and to kill the Islamic people. And this is the great tragedy. We talk about, oh, land for peace. If we could just come up with some sort of a solution. You cannot have a solution when you have people that hate one another, as the Arabs hate the Israelis.
Well, that's right. And there's really only two ways that you make peace. One side vanquishes the other, as happened after World War II, and Germany was vanquished in the war. They were the losers, and there was a victorious side and a vanquished side. And the only other way that you make peace is two peoples who decide that they're exhausted. They've exhausted each other, as in a way Iran and Iraq did after the 1980 to 1988 war. And they've made peace of sorts. Certainly there's been no aggressive activity along their borders because they've exhausted themselves. They lost a million people in that battle. But neither has happened yet in the Middle East between Israel and the Palestinians.
You tell one story, I thought it was so interesting, about going to some sort of a tourist resort on Gaza. And it was a very nice hotel that had been built, of course, with our money to bring tourists in there. But you're out along the beach, and the beach is littered with garbage and sewage, and you go back to the Palestinian manager there, and you say, why don't you clean up the beach? So would you tell that story? Because I think it tends to really to epitomize what the tragedy is today among the Palestinian people.
How it they really think. It really is. It's a very sad story, actually. This was just about 3 years after Arafat had come to Gaza in 1994. And so what people don't realize is that once the Palestinians took over in Gaza, they had full control. They controlled Gaza. They controlled a great deal of the West Bank. Today, they control about 98% of it. So there's very little, quote, occupied land left. And so I was out in Gaza, and as I said, I came back to the hotel after trekking through the sewage and a beautiful beach. You know, Gaza has gorgeous beaches if they would take care of them. And I asked the hotel owner, well, why don't you, why don't you do something about the beach? He said, oh, no, we can do nothing about this. I said, well, why not? Because of the Israeli occupation. I said, no, wait a second. 3 years ago, Arafat came to Gaza. You have the Palestinian National Authority. The Israelis aren't anywhere near here. What Israeli occupation? Oh, no, we can do nothing because of the Jews. We can do nothing because of the Jews. And this is unfortunately a mentality which has indeed paralyzed many, many people in the Palestinian areas. And Arafat is clearly encouraging it.
And another thing is, of course, the poverty that most of the Palestinians live in, abject poverty. And yet, of course, we've given billions of dollars to Arafat, and most of this has gone into his own coffers, not been used to help the Palestinian people. And the Palestinian people living in poverty look to the Jews as the source of their problem.
Well, that's right. And as you mentioned, Stan, the Arafat has taken a lot of this money and put it into personal bank accounts. He's used it also... some of his sidekicks told me, to fund PLO activities and terrorist activities overseas.
And so this is the end result of American funding, a policy that has obviously failed. And today, if you look at the map of Israel, they've given up almost all their land. I mean, they had a fairly defensible border at one time, the Jordan River. And you look at what's happened today, why at some places the West Bank extends about 8 miles from the Mediterranean Sea. They have a totally indefensible border. They're trying to build a fence. It's the only way they can keep the suicide bombers out, and they're being condemned for building a fence.
Well, that's absolutely right. And anybody who has gone to Israel understands pretty quickly the geography, and it's untenable. You know, no country can live with a waste that is 8 miles across. And with the other side being the sea, and with the enemy side being up in the hills, looking down on you in the valley, that's what that narrow waste of Israel is all about. If the Palestinians are allowed to have a state in the West Bank, looking over them.
What if people wanted peace, this would be fine. But the Palestinians really don't want peace. They want to drive the Jews out or kill them. And yeah, this is what the point you make so well in your book.
Yes. Now, I think that clearly is the case with the Palestinian leadership, and it's clearly the case with the preachers of hate, the Islamic clerics that Arafat has appointed, people like the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, Ikrama Sabri, whom I interviewed for the book, and who says that the Jews are the sons of monkeys and pigs, and that there is not a single stone in Jerusalem that belongs to the Jews. On the other hand, I think there are an awful lot of ordinary Palestinians who are pretty much fed up with this, and they're fed up with the bombings, they're fed up with the terror, they're fed up with the corruption of Arafat. By the way, that's one of the great untold stories, Stan, of the Palestinian Authority, and for some reason the mainstream media just doesn't want to go into that. I tried to do this with a number of major publications in the United States over the past 5 years, and nobody will touch the story. Arafat's billions stashed away. And the way that he uses monopoly capitalism through cronies, through his wife, through a sidekick of his named Mohammed Rashid, and they set up these monopolies to import cement, to import petroleum products, and flour and wheat and all kinds of stuff into the West Bank and Gaza. And Arafat takes a percentage anywhere between 10 and 20% of everything that comes in there. And it goes off into these private bank accounts. Nobody wants to do that story.
60 Minutes did a pretty good story about 3 weeks ago on Arafat. I was so surprised to see it. They were talking about his $1 billion he has stashed away here, there, and elsewhere, but they never mentioned most of that came from the pockets of poor people in a rich country, the United States.
Yes, no, you're absolutely right. And that's the first story that I know of that was done by a mainstream news organization. It was very well done. But as you say, it just scratched the surface of what that was all about. It showed that, you know, Arafat has got this incredible network of companies, which I lay out in Preachers of Hate to a certain extent, and I talk about the way that he shakes down local businesses, local Palestinian businesses. His Tufts, his security services, will go in there and and shake down business owners. If they don't pay them off, they put them in jail. There's one story I tell about them going into a hotel owner in Ramallah, and this guy had just invested about $5 million in a hotel, and he wanted to sell it, and he found a foreign owner who was going to pay $7 or $8 million, and the Arafat's emissary said, "Well, we'll give you $3 and be happy that we don't burn you down."
Well, one of the things, though, that's so disturbing is the attitude of some of the young Palestinians. Now, the older people are not as radical, but so many of the young people have been filled with hatred, and you even talk about a couple of that you met who actually killed themselves, or one of them had tried to kill himself, another one did a couple of days after you talked to him, and the only thing he wanted to do was blow himself up and kill Israelis. How do you deal with something like that? How do you get to these people and tell them, this is an absurdity?
Yeah, you're right, and the problem there, Stan, is that you can't reason with people who have already become irrational. There's really nothing that you can do with those people except perhaps a long period of psychotherapy. It really is tragic, and you see that Arafat has, since 1994, one of the main things that he has done has been to change the education system. You mentioned quite correctly earlier that the older people are much less radical. Why are they less radical? Because they were not brought up in Arafat's education system. I talk about the school books that he's used and that he has, you know, brought into the West Bank and Gaza. And in the beginning, they were brought in with our money, U.S. money. We helped to reissue the school books.
Now, we put up the money to issue these radical school books?
We did, and we did so, I believe, with the best of intentions, but without monitoring what Arafat was actually doing.
Oh, was that under USAID, or who put up the money?
It was under USAID. It was under Clinton and USAID, and the idea at that point was to do anything that the Israeli Labor Party government wanted and anything that the Clinton administration wanted. And they really didn't have very much oversight. So for almost 6 years, Arafat was using school books with incredible anti-Semitic filth in them. I mean, really taking passages from the Quran that talk about Jews as the monkeys, sons of monkeys and pigs, training children, indoctrinating children that Jews are the enemies of Muslims, they're the enemies of Arabs, and they should be killed. They have no legitimacy, they have no place in the Middle East. When Arafat redid the school books in the year 2000-2001, in fact, he's still in the middle of that effort, they still include things like geography lessons with maps of Palestine. Identify your country. Well, your country, Palestine, is guess what? It is all of Israel plus the West Bank and Gaza. There is no Israel in the map of the Middle East that is taught to the children under Arafat's authority.
Well, one of the things you talked about was Mubarak, and supposedly most people think Mubarak is the good guy. We give him I don't know how many billions of dollars every year, and yet, of course, there they control, the Egyptian government controls all the media, all the television, and you were commenting on how they put on this special on the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion to inflame the average Egyptian citizen against the Jews.
Yes, that's right, and this was last year during Ramadan, which is their month of fast, so-called fasting. I mean, that's a whole other story. It's an orgy of eating at night. But it's when families are together, families are looking at television in the evenings, and they put on this 40-part series, a dramatic series, like a soap opera, if you wish, based on the Protocols of the Elders of Zion. So they dramatized this, and they had characters. And it was really just to promote anti-Semitic filth. And Mubarak came back and said, "Oh, no, there's nothing anti-Semitic about this at all."
Well, there's no way you can go into the protocols without seeing anti-Semitism written all over it. And as I said earlier, the problem is that if you do not understand the geopolitics and who really created this, why, it's almost believable, because there's so many of the things they talk about that seem to be happening, and yet, of course, so much of it's the false perception, and yet, of course, unless you're well-educated or aware of what's happening, why many people fall victim to this really scurrilous document. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Kenneth Timmerman, and we'll welcome your calls here at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295.
you observe that there was an organized effort to dumb down children all across America? As we see falling SAT scores, it's very easy to say, well, gee, we need to just spend more money. That'll solve our problem. Ladies and gentlemen, that won't solve the problem at all, because there is an organized program within the hierarchy of education to dumb down our children intentionally. Outcome-Based Education is a fascinating book written by Pamela Hobbs Hofker and Pat Lutzik, going into the background of the program of the humanists who gained control of the educational establishment in the United States to change the attitude of our children, to change their attitude towards God and family and country. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for Outcome-Based Education. Once you understand what they're doing to your children, you'll never look at the world through the same eyes again. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR.
Hello, this is health journalist Bill Sardi. By the time you reach the retirement years, the average American will be taking 7 different prescription medications. Wouldn't it be nice to stay healthy and avoid taking all those pills? One unusual molecule has been shown to be effective in maintaining health, allicin, the active ingredient in fresh garlic. You won't find much allicin in regular store-bought garlic pills, but you will in Alimax, the only 100% pure allicin garlic extract now being imported from Britain. Call 866-405-4000 to learn more about Alimax. That's 866-405-4000. Alimax.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and if you're interested in getting this book, I think this is an important enough book that we're going to carry it. It's called Preachers of Hate, Islam, and the War on America. So if you'd like to get a copy, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. This is 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then we want you to go to our website at RadioLiberty.com and pull down some of our material there, because you'll begin to learn about so many of the things we're talking about. If you have not read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, which goes into the background of the protocols, who wrote it and why, and why Henry Ford, for instance, promoted the protocols here in the United States of the Dearborn Independent, why would Henry Ford do that? He was very critical, of course, of the Jewish people, because they supposedly created communism, and yet he built the Ford Motor Plant at Gorky. Why would he do that if this was a Jewish conspiracy? There's so many inconsistencies. Let me suggest my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, which will give you an entirely different outlook on this truly evil document, and we certainly recommend you not read it. I have read it, I've read it through, and I will tell you it is not something the average person should be reading. And then, of course, we hope many of you will remember that we carry products here that help us stay on the air. One of them is called Phonopoly. And they've dumbed down our children because so many children have not been taught to read properly. This is a means of teaching children how to read phonetically, how to read and spell and pronounce words phonetically. This is what homeschooled children are taught, and they usually win the spelling bees here in the United States, because those victims of government schools have been deliberately dumbed down. If you'd like to get a Phonopoly set, there, most of the programs that teach you to read phonetically, $300, $400, $500, $600. This is $139.95, and it's 5 books. Pardon me, it's 5 games, 2 bonus games, and we throw in a couple of books. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for Phonopoly. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and our guest this afternoon is Kenneth Timmerman. We're talking about his book, Preachers of Hate. And we have Mike calling from Santa Cruz. Mike, did you have a question or comment?
Just a comment. Regarding USAID, and as your guest said, they probably had all the best intentions in what they did with the textbooks and all that. That's, I think, very nice to say, but we really shouldn't forget Hillary's pro-Palestinian position during that time.
All right, and that Hillary is embracing the Palestinians, and then, of course, when she came back to America, why, she was embracing the Jews because she wanted their votes. Hillary is a master politician, but there is no question that she did embrace the Palestinians, is there?
Oh yes. Let me tell you a quick story.
You go ahead and tell the story.
And our listener as well. Thank you for that call. Hillary went and embraced Suha Arafat, Yasser Arafat's wife, in, I believe it was Ramallah, when she was giving a speech, and the speech, which Hillary was listening to and clapping and nodding and smiling all the way through, Suha Arafat was saying, well, the Jews are gassing our children with poison gas, and they're committing a Holocaust against Palestinians. And there was Hillary with the earphones in her head, so she was getting a simultaneous translation, clapping and smiling all the way along this. And I asked Hillary Clinton about a year and a half later. She came to a pro-Israel rally in Washington, last April it was, and she was coming down the steps of the Capitol to the podium. And I was there with the number of senators and a few members of the press corps, and I said, well, and there were a bunch of Orthodox rabbis behind me. You have to have this part of the story. You need to have this part of the story. They're Lubavitchers who were behind me, you know, and they looked very distinctive, of course, with their hats and their beards and their dress, and they were great. And so Hillary comes down the steps, and I say, Mrs. Clinton, this is Kenneth Timmerman from Insight Magazine, yada, 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 and do you regret having kissed Suha Arafat? People were cheering behind me, and then she just sort of rolled her eyes and walked away. But that's the way that the Clintons deal with their misdeeds in the past. Oh, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. What's past is past. Now let's go to the future.
Yeah, I'm repentant now. I've become a born-again Christian, and I'm so sorry that I got caught. I mean, about Monica Lewinsky, and if it really matters, what is. Anything else, Mike?
Well, didn't she claim to be part Jewish at one point?
Well, she really isn't, because, of course, that would come not from her mother, from her father's side, and Jewishness is passed through the mother, never through the father.
No,
okay.
But he's right. She claimed that as a way of gaining votes.
But she really isn't Jewish. So,
just like Bill claimed at one point to be part black. Or
Anyway, thanks so much, Mike. Let's go to Bart calling from Carmel. Hi, Bart. How are you doing?
Fine, sir. Thank you very much. Mr. Timmerman, I have a question for you. Yes, the past is the past, but what has occurred in the past has direct link to what is occurring in the world today, as my question will illustrate. I am currently in the middle, halfway through, of a book called Holy Blood, Holy Grail, which is a historical book going all the way back to the Knights Templar era. And they speak, it deals heavily with a group called the Priory of Sion, S-I-O-N. And the matter of the Protocols of Zion is also dealt with in this book. I would be curious, one, have you read the book and what's your evaluation of it? And two, who do you believe the Merovingians actually were? And this is...
Wait a minute. Let's take one question. Are you acquainted with this book, Holy Blood, Holy Grail?
No, I'm not.
All right. Well, let me tell you, if you finish the book, you'll find out that Jesus Christ escaped over there to the southern coast of France, and he married Mary Magdalene. If you believe that, you believe anything. Have you completed the book, Bart?
No, I'm only halfway through.
Well, I would suggest you read it way through. It is a great deal of misinformation mixed with truth, okay?
I wanted to ask you what your evaluation of this book was. Apparently it has had a powerful impact, and I was only reading it as a matter of curiosity.
Right, well, I'll tell you what, Jesus was crucified, and he went up to heaven. I believe that. I do not believe that he married Magdalene and began the Merovingian line, but that's the theme of this book, and it's been a very, very convincing book, created a lot of confusion in a lot of people.
You think it's deliberate disinformation?
I think it's just like the Protocols of the Elders of Zion.
Also deliberate.
Absolutely. Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much. And, of course, as you get into this more and more, you find out there is so much information out there that is intentionally designed to confuse. So, fortunately, I knew the answer to that. Do you want to have any reply at all to what Bart was saying?
Well, I appreciate you having taken that. There's a great deal of conspiracy thinking, and I found that in the Muslim, Islamic, in the Muslim Middle East, and there it becomes murderous. When you marry hate to capability, you get murder.
And unfortunately, there are so many of the people over there, even the young people, who are swept up in this whole program of hatred, and they're willing to give their lives because they believe they're going to go to paradise. Well, I'm very, very concerned that an awful lot of them are going to die for absolutely nothing, but an awful lot of other people are going to die along with them. We'll be back in just a moment with Kenneth Timmerman, and of course, welcome your calls here at Radio Liberty at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295.
WLIB Have you ever wondered about the boys we left behind in Vietnam, in Korea? Did you ever know that we left 25,000 American boys behind in Russia, in Siberia, at the end of the Second World War? Have you ever wondered what really happened in Oklahoma City, what really happened with the TWA 800 on the route down off the eastern coast of Uruguay? Well, ladies and gentlemen, all of the subjects are well covered in a fascinating book by Craig Roberts entitled The Medusa File. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, order The Medusa File. Actually, Craig Roberts was a police officer working on the Oklahoma City bombing. And this book has been suppressed very effectively across America, and it's self-published, but I promise you that there's no other book anywhere that will give you more contemporary history, frightening history that every American needs to know. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR now.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I just want to mention a couple of the other items that we carry here at Radio Liberty. And one of them would be the big Berkey water filters and the Berkey light water filters. And a lot of people buy bottled water. They think that's really wonderful. And if you want to buy bottled water, that's great. But the Berkey water filters do an excellent job of purifying water. Now, the big Berkey is made of stainless steel, and you put water in the top. It comes out the bottom after going through ceramic filters that are packed with activated charcoal, and most of the heavy metals and the pesticides and herbicides and chlorine taste are gone. And this has been used for 150 years by missionaries, but you can't buy big Berkey in the state of California. You can buy it in every other state but California and Iowa. It's $239.95, and if you buy it from us, why, you give it a free video or a free four-tape set that we produced. But you can, of course, in California get something called the Berkey Light. It's made of Lexan, so it's transparent. You can see the water level. The filters are ever so much superior. We call them the Black Berkey, not water filters, but water purifiers, and they do a much better job of taking everything out, but they have to be replaced every 2 to 3 years, depending upon how much they're used, maybe 4 years. Both units can get post filters to take the fluoride out, because fluoride you should not be drinking under any circumstances. Take out MTB and arsenic as well. If you want to get the post filters, they are extra. However, the Berkey Light is $199.95 plus shipping, and of course you have the same offer where you'll get a four tape set or a video we produced. If you buy it from us, call us at 1-800-544-8927. What's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR? And if I could recommend the video Diaprax, which tells you what's happening to the evangelical church in America today, you will never forget that video. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Kenneth Timmerman, his book, Preachers of Hate, Islam and the War in America. And unfortunately, what's happening is that the Islamists believe that the Zionists are out to take over the world, and they're using the United States to further their agenda. And that the Zionists really want to kill all the Islamic, all the Muslims. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes, this is what's going on, and the preachers of hate are winning that battle for the soul of Islam, and that's the unfortunate thing, and that is the deadly thing that we are facing today.
All right, fine. Well, let's go to George, who's George, who's calling us here from Toronto. Hi, George. How are you doing?
Yes, good evening, gentlemen. Two questions, please. Could you please tell me how Jerusalem fits into the plans of Islam, and number two, who is the real God that Muslims worship? Thank you, and I'll listen off the air.
Okay, fine. The two questions, where does Jerusalem fit into this, and who is the Muslim God?
Well, I will address the first one, but I'm not going to take the second one. This isn't a book of theology. It's a book, and it's important actually to make this distinction for Muslim listeners. This is a book that really talks about how Islam is being interpreted by the preachers of hate who are today in power in places like Saudi Arabia and the Palestinian Authority in Egypt and elsewhere. But, you know, I certainly don't claim to be an Islamic scholar myself. Jerusalem in the Islamic tradition is only sacred to Islam for one reason, and one reason only. It's because the Prophet Muhammad had a dream that he was transported on a horse called Al-Burak, which is something like a griffin or a unicorn-type mythic animal, to Jerusalem. And from Jerusalem, he ascended into the seventh heaven. He never set foot in Jerusalem. There's no Muslim shrine in Jerusalem historically. There's no physical tie or material tie to the city of Jerusalem. It's just that Muhammad, because he hated the Jews, and this is, by the way, all through the Quran, he fought battles against the Jews. He tried to exterminate the Jews already in his own time, the Bani Hareza, among others. He wanted to go to Jerusalem, which was the seat, obviously, of the Jewish religion and the holy site of Judaism.
And didn't he actually go ascend into the heaven and then come back the same evening, something of some sort?
Yes, exactly. I mean, but that is the only tie, that is the only claim that Muslims have to Jerusalem. They say that Jerusalem is the third holy city of Islam after Mecca and Medina. And you then ask them why. Well, it's because the Prophet Muhammad had a dream. And in that dream, he ascended from Jerusalem to the seventh heaven and came back.
All right, and for George up in Toronto, I'd suggest you get some of our interviews with Mr. Wynn, Craig Wynn, who spent 2 years reading all of the other Quran and the Hadith and the Surah and all the other things that are available. And you understand that the Muslims worship Allah, but Allah is not the God of the Bible. Allah is the moon god. In fact, that the crescent moon is their sign. They don't understand that. They've been told it is the God of the Bible, but if you get into the theology of this, you can learn a lot from those tapes, and we'll be putting together a four-tape set on the Islamic religion. And the Muslims lived in peace, really, with the Christians and the Jews from the time of the First World War, when Great Britain destroyed the Ottoman Empire, up until recent times. It was really only about 1980 that this radical form of Islam began taking a hold of the imagination of the Islamic people. And I think a lot of Muslim people, and I think you bring this out very well, Ken, a lot of the Islamic people really feel that, you know, they had this great culture in the past and they've lost this, that one time they were the leaders in architecture and mathematics and this wonderful culture that they created, and you can see the beautiful buildings they built, and now, of course, the people are living in poverty, and they really more or less blame the Jews for this, don't they?
Well, that's right, and it, in some ways, I mean, it would be comic if it weren't so pitiful. You look at a country like Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia has earned, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars, and that's, I'm sure, a low estimate, from oil over the past 30 years. And they have yet to build a single monument to civilization. They don't even have an education system which is capable of bringing generations of young Saudis into the workforce, so they have the education capable to be able to function in jobs, in normal jobs. They have to hire people from the Philippines, from India, from Pakistan, and whatever, not just to do menial jobs, but to do management jobs, to do maintaining aircraft and stuff like that. They can't even graduate people to do that kind of job. And so when things go wrong in Saudi Arabia and countries like that, they blame the Jews.
But one of the things that's rather disturbing, on page 66 of your book, you talk about how Saudi Arabia is pushing this radical form of Islam, and that of the 1,400 registered mosques in the United States, the majority of them are headed by people who are trained by Saudi Arabia in this radical form of Islam. That is very disturbing to me, because what you're doing, what the Saudis are doing, is creating a dissident group within our ranks that really believe in this whole Islamic radical form of the world and hate Jews. And this is not something that we should be encouraging in our country. And yet, of course, it's being financed by our good friends, the Saudis. Why are we allowing them to come in here and disrupt our nation?
Well, that's a very good question. I think it's a very important question to ask. And it's something that the Americans need to come to grips with, especially after 9/11. We have what I believe is a fifth column in America of people who do not accept our form of government, groups who are organized as lobbies in Congress, groups who try to affect the White House and policy, people like the groups such as the American Muslim Congress and the Council on American Islamic Relations, who form what I call in the book the Wahhabi lobby. And Wahhabi, obviously, after the form of Islam that's practiced in Saudi Arabia, which is where many of them get either leadership or funds or support or whatever. And the problem is that we only have the legal means to go after these groups when crimes are committed. After all, that is our system, and it's the protection of the civil liberties of all of us. But many of these groups as we have seen since 9/11, have been using our freedoms against us. They've been using our freedoms to collect money in this country to send overseas for Hamas, for Islamic Jihad, and other terrorist groups. And now some of the leaders of these same organizations who have been invited into the White House are sitting in federal prison on terrorism-related charges.
One of the points you made, you talked about how they were just preaching this jihad. They were going from town to town, pushing this in Saudi Arabia and certainly within the Palestinian area. And on page 64, you tell about how one of the intelligence agents working for the Israelis had put together a video pointing out how they were preaching these radical beliefs within the Palestinian community. And so he gives a copy of this to the Prime Minister of Israel, Mr. Peres. And Peres then goes to Arafat and asks him to basically denounce what's going on. And instead of denouncing it, Peres makes excuses for Arafat preaching this radical form of belief in the Palestinian area. Did that bother you?
Well, hold on, and then what happens is Arafat turns around and he looks at Peres. He says, "No, those were my words. That is indeed what I said." And he said, "See, the point is this: is that Arafat goes around and he does it with us as well. When he speaks to American reporters, to foreign reporters, he talks in English." And he talks about peace with Israel and how we're going to live together. We're going to have two states, a Palestinian state and an Israeli state. When he speaks to his own people, when he speaks to Arab leaders, he talks in Arabic, first of all, and he speaks about jihad. And jihad, of course, is holy war. And he is exhorting his people to jihad against the Jews and ultimately against us as well. And that is the point of this book, is that when the Jews, when Jews get killed, Americans are at risk. Because it only starts with the Jews. It never ends with the Jews. I wanted to go back, Stan, if I could, just for a second, and give our listeners a couple of quotes from the school books that Arafat has reprinted and put into the Palestinian Authority, because this is what's poisoning the minds of these young children, and this is how the only way that you can explain young children going out and strapping explosives around their chests and going and blowing themselves up just to kill Jews.
Now, are these the textbooks that we finance, the USAID?
These are the ones that we finance with that USAID money in the first years of the Palestinian Authority. In the third grade, children learn hate through vocabulary. Okay, you have a question. The Zionist enemy did something against civilians with its aircraft. Well, the Zionist enemy attacked civilians with its aircraft. So that's how you learn these verbs. In the sixth grade, they ask the question, who is the thief who has torn our homeland from us? In the seventh grade, students are expected to have internalized this anti-Semitism so they can recite it on their own. So why do the Jews hate Muslim unity and want to cause division among them? This is the kind of drill. I mean, it's just drilled into these kids from the very beginning up until high school. And by the time they get into ninth grade, they're taught in their Islamic education study. By the way, we don't have Christian education study in the government schools, but they have Islamic education in their government schools. And they're taught, one must beware of the Jews, for they are treacherous and disloyal. And they're expected to write an essay on that theme. So this is the kind of thing that Arafat has inculcated into a whole generation of kids since he's gone to Gaza in 1994. And we see the results today. They did an opinion poll, which I report on, in Preachers of Hate, where they asked them what form of government would you like to see in your free state of Palestine, and the options are: would you like a one-party Islamic state, or would you like a multi-party democracy? And the responses were about 50-50. It was 42%, 42% for each one. They did the same question 10 years earlier, before Arafat had come back. And, of course, it was overwhelmingly in favor of a multi-party democracy. So you see you see this in the opinion polls. You see it in the kids, the way they're brought up. You see it in the suicide bombings or the homicide bombings, if you prefer. Arafat is training young people to become Islam's guided messengers.
But the thing that bothers me about this whole scenario you're describing is that back in the 1980s, why the Israelis had advanced into Lebanon. They were about to really eradicate Arafat and the PLO, and we intervened, and we carried Arafat and the PLO over to Tunisia, and we rearmed them, and then we allow Arafat to come back, and we finance Arafat as he's doing everything he can to inflame the people on one side. We finance the Israelis on the other. This doesn't make sense. Why would we be financing both sides of a conflict?
Yeah, I don't think that we rearmed Arafat in Tunisia, and I don't think we actually helped them financially until the Oslo Accords in 1993, when Clinton was president. In fact, there was a ban on any kind of contact between our diplomats or our government officials and the PLO until, I believe, 1991, when the first President Bush went to the Madrid Peace Conference.
Well, now, how did they get out of Lebanon? Didn't we actually rescue them and take them to Tunisia?
That was the French. That was the French.
All right.
Come on, Stan. It was the French.
All right.
I was actually there with Arafat, and I can tell you, it was French warships that transported him. And it was the French. We got involved in 1991, in Madrid, in the peace conference, but much more importantly, in 1993 with the Oslo Accords. Now, this is a very important story. Oslo was supposed to be the historic agreement of land for peace. The Israelis would give to the Palestinians land that they had seized in 1967 in the Six-Day War, and in exchange for that land, in exchange for autonomy to begin with and subsequently a state, in exchange for that land, they would get peace and full peace. In other words, they would get secure borders, they would get economic exchanges with the new Palestinian entity. They would be at peace, and like France and Germany, or like Britain and Spain, or like the United States and Canada. They would have full peace. Well, we see what they've gotten. They've given the territory. They've given the land. And they have given more and more and more land since 1993. And what have they gotten in exchange? Murder and mayhem.
Well, the Oslo Accord, I think that the Israelis were supposed to give up 95% to 97% of the land that they'd taken.
Yes.
And Arafat turned it down.
Well, this was again, now you're referring to the year 2000 agreement that Clinton had negotiated, which was supposed to be the final, what they call the final status agreement. And there was yet more land that these, see, there's not... We're really almost talking on the margins here. Again, if you go and look at the map of the West Bank and Gaza, right now, as we're speaking, the Palestinians have 99% of Gaza. You know, the few Israeli settlements that are there in Gaza, Netzarim and a few others, I mean, they're tiny. They're really just tiny, tiny pockets. And if you go into the West Bank, there are areas that take, the Israelis have more territory, but these are dormitory communities outside of Jerusalem. And in fact, if you look around the hills outside of Jerusalem, these are all, you can't really call them settlements. They're suburbs. It's the suburbs of Jerusalem, which some people call settlements. And I think there will have to be some territorial exchange here in the end, and the Israelis have shown that have indicated that they're very willing to engage in this. But that's not what it's all about, Stan. This is not about land. It's not about territory. If it were about something as reasonable and rational as land and territory, they would have made a deal years ago. That's not what this is about. Arafat wants to kill the Jews.
And I think that you make that very, very clear. And it's not just Arafat, it's all of the Islamic countries. They will not rest until the Jews have been killed and driven out of the Middle East. That is the tragedy, and why can't our leaders see that? Why do they insist on the Jews making more and more and more concessions? And every time the terrorists come in and blow up 50 Israelis, we say, you've got to show restraint. You can't just go attacking the enemy. And yet, of course, when we were attacked, and why immediately we went to war with Afghanistan, and now we're at war with Iraq, all about the terrorist attack on America. But we always want the Israelis to show restraint.
Well, that's a very good point, and it's important to make that. In general, this president, President Bush, has been much more understanding of what the Israelis are laboring under. The Israelis have lost over 600 people to terrorist attacks just in the past 3 years. Now, you put that on the scale of America times 50, roughly. I mean, they've lost 30,000 people, the equivalent of 30,000 people here in America, and they haven't declared an open, all-out war. You know, the Israelis are still engaged in some restraint. They're targeted killings. They're not mass killings. They haven't, you know, sent the army back into Gaza to reoccupy Gaza, for instance. I tell one of the stories I tell in Preachers of Hate is of the bombing in Netanya, because I want people to get a first-hand experience of what one of these terrorist attacks is all about.
Well, they're going to have to buy the book because we don't have time to, but that's a fascinating story, and this incredible thing about this fellow who dresses up as a woman and goes into the dining room there, and I don't know how many people he killed.
29.
You're going to have to buy the book, and we'll carry this as Preachers of Hate. Gives you a real feeling of the total frustration the people over there must feel. Ken, thank you so much for being with us. Ken will be back again on our other program tonight at 8 o'clock. And until then, thanks so very much.
Thank you, Sam.
Bye-bye.
Look forward to it.
Have you ever wondered what the Vietnamese War was really all about? Why America, the most powerful nation in the world, spent 10 years fighting in Southeast Asia against a nation the size of the state of Mississippi, and America lost that war? Do you really believe that happened by accident? There's so much to the story of Vietnam that the American people have never really known. And in our four-tape set, Vietnam, the Untold Story, you're going to get the information that you need to understand the tragedy of that event. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for Vietnam, the Untold Story, the story of what really happened in Vietnam that has been suppressed from the American people for the last 20 years.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. We have a video that's put out by Carol Matriciano. It's called The New Barbarians, and it's simply the film footage that was actually shown on Arab television to the youth of the Islamic countries. And you want to see something really horrible, what they're doing to the minds of these children. And they have little children marching around 6 or 7 years old with their weapons or putting on the explosive belt. And they talk to them and they interview them in Arabic. And all they want to do is kill the Jews. Television is a powerful, powerful medium for good or for evil, and it's being used. You need to see this video, The New Barbarians. And Carol Matriciano has done an amazing job of putting this together. I'm as pleased as I can be to be able to offer it to you. The New Barbarians by Carol Matriciano will give you an insight into what we are really up against, because they're not just out to kill the Jews. They're out to kill the Americans and the people of our country as well. And then we have a great new video. It's called Diaprox. It's the story of the church growth movement and an effort to change the message and the music of the Christian church, and to use certain psychological techniques, the same sort of techniques that were used on our boys over in Korea during the Korean War. These techniques that are aimed at altering their reality and identifying them with a group. And you really need to get this video, Diaprax, D-I-A-P-R-A-X. You will never look at the world through the same eyes again. We're told in the latter days there's going to be a great apostasy, a great falling away from Christianity. And this is exactly what's happened. We've changed the message of the church. We've changed the music of the church. And now we're changing the structure of the church. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and order Diaprax. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time when we, of course, have to tell you that Radio Liberty is just listener-supported, and if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, our telephone number, 1-800-555-448-927, that's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And we do hope that many of you will go to our website at radioliberty.com, where you can listen to our radio programs 5 hours a day, and not get very much done, but you'll get a lot of education, and it will help you better to understand what's really going on in the world. As we bring you a top-quality guest like Mr. Timmerman, we talked to this afternoon, who's been on the front lines of this battle for many years, and I believe is a very reliable reporter. So if you go to our website at RadioLiberty.com, you can listen to our programs 5 hours a day. You can pull down our archive programs, and this program you just heard will be archived there. And we give you our permission to copy those programs and to disseminate them. You can pull down our newsletters, and we hope that you'll read those and disseminate those as well. You can pull down many of the other items that are there that we've written, our Population Control Agenda Monograph. We'll do a good job to explain to you why the wars are going on. The purpose is to kill as many people as possible, because there are spiritual forces working behind the scenes which most people are totally unaware of, and yet if you read their publications, they will tell you that we intend to kill most of the people in the world. We have a new publication. It comes from Marie Strong and Mikhail Gorbachev, and in that, and we have copies of it, although they've taken it down from their webpage, we have the original, where they talk of the necessity to identify the people in the fundamentalist religions, or the people in the Muslim, Jewish, and Christian faith who are fundamentalists, and exterminate them. They don't beat around the bush. They're going to exterminate them. You read the writings of Barbara Marx Hubbard. She tells about the necessity in the first stage of killing a quarter of the world's population. Now, Barbara Marx Hubbard is one of the wealthiest women in America. She ran for the vice presidential nomination of the Democratic Party in 1984. She's a consultant to our government. You'll see her name on at so many of the meetings that are being held throughout this country today. And Barbara Marx Hubbard, in the original text of her book, the Revelation, the Book of Co-Creation, talked about the necessity to kill a quarter of the population of the world, and then went on to say, that's not your job, my dear. That is ours, for we are the riders of the pale horse, death. And you remember, of course, that the book, when it was published under the auspices of the Lawrence Rockefeller Endowment for the Humanities. That's the Revolution, a Revelation, the Book of Co-Creation. But we have the original manuscript, and all of these are available through Radio Liberty. We want you to have that information. We want you to understand, and then help us to reach others with an understanding of the fact we're involved in a spiritual battle that's being fought on a political and ideological and cultural battlefield. We do hope that many of you will get the new video we have called Diaprax. That's Diaprax. It's 2 hours and 20 minutes, and you'll watch that, and you'll suddenly realize that the Christian church in America is under attack. And then, of course, we have the video of the new barbarians. Goes into the film footage that's being shown in Islamic countries to recruit people into the terrorist movement, and so many other videos that we have. We have my most recent talk, Iraq, the Untold Story, on a video that goes into who's really behind the movement, the attack on Iraq, and why America did attack Iraq. It has nothing to do with weapons of mass destruction and nothing to do with democracy. And if you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and ministers. But please remember to pray for my ministry of Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, we'll be back with you once again. Dr. Stan, goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.